Hello there, you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I am one of your hosts, Angel, with John Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Holy shit, it feels like it's been forever.
It kind of has. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been like, what, 3 weeks? Holy crap, that's almost a month. That's like a year in fucking comic book time.
Yeah, I didn't crash the ship when you gave me the keys to drive it for those 2 weeks. I think it
went
pretty well. Kevin was great. He was such a good interview, really nice guy. And it was always good to get my friend Tom back to review some comics. So
yeah, I felt like I was replaced there for a second.
Never.
It was good. So I'm back, gang. I had a couple of weeks off with the fam. Got to make sure you spend time with the family so they don't forget you and you can stay happily married. Hopefully there. So yeah, it's coming to the end of the summer. For those of you guys that have kids, you know it's like you're getting happy because they're going back to school very, 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 very soon. So it's all good. But it's been a great summer, and I can't. It's just this whole year. It's already August, bro.
Seriously, August. Crazy. Yeah,
Like it was just January. We're just like bringing in a new year, and it's like August. No. That's more than half the year. Crap. It just goes by so fast.
I don't know time because I'm stuck in this interstellar black hole thing, right? Have you ever seen the movie Interstellar?
Yes.
Yeah. So people have told me that my backdrop reminds them of like when Matthew McConaughey goes into that black hole. He's right. Got that whole grid that he's facing.
But here's the thing with that movie. We're going to go into the tangent already. So whenever you introduce concepts that haven't been proven yet, it fucks me up. Because that whole thing with him having a connection with his daughter and being behind a bookshelf, that was the fifth dimension.
Right.
And trying to convey the fifth dimension in a two-dimensional space, no, in a 3D space with a two-dimensional object is fucked beyond fucked.
It is.
But Matthew McConaughey was great.
Oh, he's great. And that set, that whole grid thing, they built that. Like, you know, Chris Nolan doesn't like to do a lot of CGI. They obviously had to do some CGI in that movie, but so much of that were like miniatures and practical sets. So really? Like Matthew McConaughey is really hanging there from wires, like going through all this stuff because Nolan's like, that's got to be real.
Oh my God, that's insane. Yeah. Insane. But yes, now I'm going to go back and watch that movie, but it fucked me up at the very end. All right, cool. Guys, welcome to another episode of the Indie Comic Review. We got books from last week because we kind of skipped. And then we're going to shoot them in here because this week I think we only had one or two. So we've got five books for you this week. We'll kind of like shoot through them. We didn't want to skip over last week just because our reads were really, really good, and worth mentioning for you guys. But before we hop into the reviews, just a really quick announcement. Justin Bart, who's co-founder of Amazing Action Comics, was actually at the really cool Comic-Con up in Michigan this past weekend. Complete sellout of all books.
Awesome.
Which was absolutely phenomenal. He sent me a whole bunch of pictures, and this was like the second volume of issues 1 and 2. And I hadn't printed out issue 2 yet. I printed out specifically for the show, and he sold through. So it was really, really cool. I mean, just hearing his voice, it was like he was just like a kid in the candy shop who was excited to like get everything that he ever wished for. Was really awesome. So there's a couple of more Comic-Cons. I think there's a Detroit Comic-Con. There's another one that's coming up. That's another big one as well. We're waiting to hear word as to whether or not he's going to get in. And if he does, then I don't know. I might hop up there on the plane and take a ride up and, you know, we'll hang out for the day, do some drawings and then some signings and we'll have some more books. So really, really exciting stuff.
We should get Justin back on. I know you started this review portion with Justin way back then. We should get him back on, though, just to kind of chat with the two of you. I'd love to ask, you know, more questions about Amazing Action Comics and what you guys do, how you guys got started. And I think our viewers would probably like to check that out too.
Yeah. So I'm gonna talk to him, have a chat with that. We've been going crazy just, you know, with these artist guys that have some books that are due out soon. So I know we've been kind of busy. So, but yeah, I'll definitely give him a chat and hopefully we can get him on soon. Talk about things that we have hopefully coming up for the end of this year and the beginning of next year. Just things take long. So long,
I know.
But it's exciting when they do come out. So stay tuned on that. But yeah, just wanted to give Justin a shout out for it was his first con, and he had his like table set up. He made his own little like Project Shadow Bree, you know, like a banner, and then he had just the book spread out. And I think he had his son there on the second day of the show. And I think they sold out before 12 p.m., which was
nice.
You know, you're twiddling your thumbs for the rest of the day. And I think it's a big wrestling show too, because they had a whole bunch of wrestlers there as well. So I guess he got to walk around and stuff like that. But it was cool to, you know, to have people support. And he had told me this one story, which was great. I think I want to share it. So there was this kid who had special needs, had like a box of like crayons, and I probably should let him tell it, but I don't know if we're going to have him on. But had stuff that he wanted to like barter out, trade with, you know, people at the con so that he can get, you know, something else. And so he came up to Justin and asked if he could trade. So he traded the box of crayons or whatever it is for a copy of Project Shadowbreed. And then later on, the mom, towards the end of the day, comes and gives Justin the $4 for the book or whatever it is, and thanked him for doing that, because that kind of set off what happened after that, which is he said he traded off the book for a Pokemon card. And then the Pokemon card he traded off for an action figure that he wanted. So at the end of the day, he actually got what he wanted by trading all these different things. But along the way, when he traded off the book for the Pokemon card, this other guy who had submitted to us quite some time ago during the whole COVID thing that had happened, where we had to kind of shut everything up for submissions, went like, oh crap, Amazing Action Comics is here. I submitted with those guys. And he hunted Justin down to the table, and they had a great conversation. So
that's,
it was just
so cool.
It set up a whole bunch of this stuff, which is just ridiculously awesome.
I think kids smart, working around just to get that action figure. That's pretty
cool. Dude, smart. It reminded me of that Office episode where Dwight was like, you know, trading things up all the way to like what he got it, which was fantastic. So I thought it was a really cool story. So yeah, things happen. So we want to thank everybody for coming out to the con and supporting the book and supporting Justin and his project and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely go to AmazingActionComics.com and, you know, see what we got going on and other stuff that we got, you know, that's coming out. So thanks for that. Hopefully you'll see us at some more cons up in the future. All right, let's dive into it. So we got the Indie Comic Review. These are four books for this week, which is August 9th, and the previous week, which would have been August 2nd. So why don't you kick us off? Because we had three great books that, you know, we had last week. So whichever one you want. I know you're dying to talk about one because I can see him right behind you.
Let's just start with the Sumerian in the room, right? The big Sumerian elephant in the room. So yeah, oh, I'm so excited for this. I think it's no secret that I'm a big fan of Conan. Original flavor as created by Robert E. Howard in the pulp stories of the 1930s. And then of course the, you know, immensely popular Marvel comic series that started in 1971. And then there's great Dark Horse run that Kurt Busiek started with Carrie Nord and a bunch of other creators picked up after that. And Conan as a license has bounced around. So, you know, as a comic in Marvel to Dark Horse, went back to Marvel a couple years ago, and I really think Marvel only had it just so they could celebrate the 50th anniversary of Conan the Barbarian number one from 1971, and then they let it go, and it was picked up by Titan Comics, and it's really cool because they actually are partnering with Heroic Signatures, which is the new, you know, sort of license holder for that IP. It was originally, I think, Conan Properties Limited, and now it is Heroic Signatures. So all of the Robert E. Howard works are under Heroic Signatures. And so Titan Comics, right off the gate, they have a brand new Conan the Barbarian number one that came out last week. It was a little delayed. It was supposed to come out in July, but it finally came out. A ton of variant covers. There's a beautiful Mike Mignola cover. There's a great Dan Panosian image that was the main cover. Art Germ had a great cover too. I, of course, went with the homage cover Conan number one from 1971 that Barry Windsor Smith did. And this is Patch Zercher. He used to be Patrick Zercher, but now he's Patch Zercher. And it's, if you know that that image from that Conan number one, it is the same image, but what's really neat, it's from a different angle. So you're kind of like the original one, you're kind of over here looking more straight on. It's the same action, same background, but like as if you're this other guy over here. So I thought that was a really neat technique to do something familiar but different, right? And that is really what this book is. This is familiar, but it's a little different. So this is a love letter to basically the Marvel Comics Conan series from the 70s and through the 80s. specifically, you know, as under the pencil of the great John Buscema, who was a great, great superhero artist, but wasn't a fan of superheroics, really loved Conan. That was his book that he loved to do the most. And, you know, I just really want to point out, like, you got like this logo down, you know, the title page down here. It's just like an old Marvel comic from the 70s, complete with that type of lettering. And they also do this great thing that Marvel used to do. You know, Stan Lee used to assign nicknames, and that kind of carried through into the 70s to all the creators, right? So I'm going to read the credits as they are dictated here with these cool little nicknames that they put in there. So it is written by Grim Jim Zub, illustrated by Ravaging Rob De La Tour, colored by Villainous Jose Villaroba, lettered by the Riotous Richard Starkings, and edited by the Merciless Matt Murray. So I love that they did that. And that just, that put me in a great mood to start reading this book. Well, first I popped on the soundtrack from the you know, the first Schwarzenegger movie, put on vinyl, blasted it. And man, this was a freaking great ride. I loved this book. Jim Zub totally gets Conan. De La Torre's art is just so fluid and really just puts you in the action. And boy, this is like kind of an intense story too, because it combines, you know, Conan with the ever popular zombie genre. And you basically have this horde of mindless zombies just ravaging the land and just going through and just wiping people out. And Conan is right in the middle of it, right in the thick of it. It's Conan in his prime. He's not a king. He's not too young. Man, this book was so cool, so intense, and was just such a great ride. I cannot recommend this book enough. Even if you don't know Conan, or you're maybe not a big fan of that genre, boy, give this a shot, because this is just such a great, fun, contemporary but throwback comic. And I can't rave enough about this book, but I love this book. Great first issue, great setup. I think the license is in really good hands with Titan, and I can't wait to see what else they have coming down the pike. I can't wait to see this story finish and then what they're going to do after. They're also bringing back the black and white magazine size Savage Sword of Conan as well, which is a Marvel staple in the 70s and 80s. So yeah, if you can find copies of this, run out, get it, enjoy it, and just know, you know, this is one of the things that's best in life, this new Conan number one.
I was waiting for that. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think, you know, logistic wise, I think the creative team, superb. From, you know, the coloring to the art to the writing, it was just spot on. And for me, it wasn't a hack and slash book, which was great. I think really in comparison, if you look at Walking Dead, what was really good about Walking Dead, it wasn't a zombie book. It was the relationships that were in the book. The zombies were the catalyst to allow the story to happen. And I think this is the same thing. Like, the zombies are there, but they're sort of like the catalyst for the story that's happening around. So what's going on with the people? And when we look at the people that are, it's not just Conan. You have this messenger that's running from town to town, trying to stay ahead of the zombie horde to alert them. But then you also have Conan's story. He's already been doing what he's been doing for years, and he wants to return home. And so now he's on his way home to try to go to home, but we figure out what happens at the very end. So it was a good page turner for me. It wasn't just, you know, a dumb barbarian just going around just picking fights. It was a really intelligent guy who went out into the world to try to, you know, travel and do things, and ended up doing these, you know, adventurous things while becoming this legend at the same time, a thief and whatever, but just wanting to return home, which was great. There was a heart to it as well that I really liked. And then finding that female warrior just created sort of like this urgency of, oh shit, something's coming kind of thing. So it was overall, I agree with you 100%, really good. I'm going to continue with it. If Titan, you know, goes down the line with this, I think it's going to be something great. And our creative team is just spot on. So yeah, pick it up if you can. Conan the Barbarian from Titan Comics. you will not be disappointed.
And I like what you said, that, you know, it does come across that Conan is intelligent, because I think that people who are not that familiar with Conan and maybe only know the two Schwarzenegger movies, which, you know, are very good, valid, solid interpretations of Conan. But one of the things it doesn't heighten is his intellect. And that's sort of the thing that's the hallmark of the Robert E. Howard stuff and a lot of the Conan material, is that he, you know, there's this perception he's just a mindless barbarian who just hacks and slashes. But no, he is always the smartest guy in the room. He's always thinking. He's incredibly intelligent and is very much a self-made man as well, as it dictates in here and in the, you know, the previous stories. You know, he started on, you know, going out and adventuring on his own at like 15, 16 years old, you know? And that is something that Jim Zub captures really well, the intelligence of Conan. You know, he's almost like his era, he's almost like a Bruce Wayne, right? You know, he will figure out and think his way out of a situation, even if the end result of that thinking is, well, I just got to hack everybody around me to death.
Right.
But he's, you know, there's a thought process there. And I love that.
But it's usually not him. It's usually his protagonists or his antagonists that end up being brutal.
Yeah.
And then force him into that. But I find that ironic, because in order for you to be a really good thief, you have to have a really high level of intelligence to be able to plan out all these things. But yeah, go. Just long story short, go out and get it.
Do it.
Really good. Oh, here.
Don't you know? Finish. Let this play out, and then hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. But then go and get it.
Archer. Go get it. I love that. That's the female word. Yeah, cool.
And she's a great new character too. I thought she was a really solid character. That you know, that he teams up with in this. Yeah, really good dynamics in that book.
All right, move on to the next one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a you show.
Okay, great. So right along that line, we're just going to go right into this new book from Dynamite Comics, Fire and Ice. Boy, that's very familiar, right? So what this is, and again, I got the variant cover, the Frank Frazetta movie poster variant. So Opus Comics has been teaming up with the Frazetta Estate to do a whole bunch of comics based on Frank Frazetta properties like Dawn Attack, Death Dealer, Mothman. Basically, yeah, taking, you know, his old paintings and then doing extensive comics, you know, based off of those images. Fire and Ice was a team up in the early 80s with Frank Frazetta and Ralph Bakshi, who was an animated movie. And it really was, you know, at that time, right before the Conan movie, was the closest we got to sort of seeing that archetype on screen. You can kind of see right up top there, this guy, Dark Wolf. You know, he is Conan and Batman merged into one. You know, he's got that really cool wolf mask, but he's got all the earmarks of a Conan, you know, archetype. And the movie is fantastic. If you have not seen the movie, it's a really cool animated movie. Some of the animation does feel a little dated and a little clunky. They were doing a lot of rotoscope back then. So what rotoscoping is you have real actors doing the motions, it's filmed, and then it's animated on top and over that. And Fire and Ice really focuses on three characters. You know, you got, I'm blanking on their names, but you got Dark Wolf, I think Tigra, and then the blonde guy there. Yeah. So, or the Tigra's daughter, right? So the neat thing about this, actually, let's get to the credits first. So it's written by Bill Willingham, amazing writer, Fables, wrote a bunch of stuff over the years. Fantastic writer, Bill Willingham. Leonardo Manco, who has not done interior comics for quite some time, I believe. So this is like sort of his triumphant return to doing comic interiors. Lettered by Taylor Esposito. Edited by Matt Idelson. And this, first of all, Manco's artwork is so gorgeous. I mean, it is very Frazetta style. It fits right in line with the movie. It is lush. It is detailed. It is colored beautifully so that each scene has its own hue and its own vibe. And the story flows really well. And Willingham had a great challenge ahead of him in writing this prequel comic, because the three main characters don't meet until the movie. And he's got to tell this story where they're all nearly crossing paths, or they're so close to each other, but they don't actually see each other. So it really does keep that that sense intact. So, you know, I call that responsible prequel writing. So he's not going to change anything. He's not going to disregard anything that's going to make it fit into the movie. This is going to serve as a really good, true sequel. Dynamite does a great job with its licenses, and it's interesting that the Frazetta family did decide to go with Dynamite over this rather than have this as part of the Opus publishing initiative for the Frazetta stuff. But I think this is a great home for this. Thought it was a really fun book, great first chapter, great world building, and it really does add a lot more to the world that you do see eventually in the movie. So if you haven't seen Fire and Ice movie, definitely check it out. It's definitely worth your time, but definitely give this comic a shot too, because it is just beautiful, gorgeous comics. And one of the things that I do want to point out that I was really excited for in this is there's a great ad in here for a Dark Wolf action figure,
man. Yeah,
and that's in the 1/12 scale, so he's gonna fit right nicely. I actually have a space waiting for him because he's gonna fit right nicely with this Metro 1/12 coding. So I'm really excited for that. But yeah, what a great first issue. Again, I was a little concerned, like, okay, how are you gonna play this off? But boy, it is two masters, you know, just giving it all their all on this, and it was such a good book.
Yeah. I agree. And I haven't seen the movie yet. And, you know, I hadn't seen the movie previously, and I purposely didn't want to watch it until I read the book, because I wanted to see if it made sense without watching the movie. And I could follow everything. So I'm going to watch the movie and see the comparison. The only downside is we don't get to see Dark Wolf until the very end of the comic, because I think it's such a cool looking character. But you get the gist of the story with the mom and the daughter, this other cat that's coming into play, and then Dark Wolf at the very end. So I dug it. I'm gonna stick through. I want to say that it's a mini, right?
It would have to be as a prequel, because it's going to have to get up to that point in the movie where the movie begins. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So
now what happens after? Do they try and sequelize the movie in comic form? We'll see, you know, but there's a lot of room for them to play around in this world. So,
yeah, I love it. And the Frank Frazetta coverage is absolutely amazing. So if you've seen the movie, you'll probably like the prequel to the movie. If you haven't, definitely pick it up. It's a really good read. I found it really just another page turner. I just love beautiful art. And if the words, you know, keep you in intrigued and involved to want to turn the page, then you just have yourself a good time. I read it so quickly.
There is intrigue. There's lots of family intrigue.
Yeah.
Brothers poisoning brothers. And
there's half naked women running in the jungle. I'm just like, I kept thinking, what the fuck is going on? There's got to be huge mosquitoes, and they got like a thong on. What's going on?
The brush, right? Like just running through the leaves of the brush. Like no one gets scratched. Yeah, that is suspension of disbelief.
That's how you know I'm a dad. I just want everybody to cover up. Jesus Christ. All right, cool. Check it out. Fire and Ice from Dynamite Comics. All right, next one.
All right, we're doing it. We're back to Image Comics with a brand new series written by Rick Remender, illustrated by Max Fiumara, colored by Dave McCaig, and lettered by Russ Wooten. It is called The Sacrificers. And it's interesting because I did find some similarities in the backstory of this with Fire and Ice, where you basically have this ruling class who sort of dictates everything that happens to those that are living beneath them, so to speak. And so you kind of get this sort of dichotomy between those who are above it all, but then those who are living, you know, living it and in the ground and have to suffer the consequences of these rules that are set out by those above them. Mm-hmm. And someone mentioned this as a very, very similar to an old short story that we had to read in elementary school called The Lottery. Or maybe more middle school, because what The Lottery is about, it's written by Shirley Jackson, very famous story, but a lot of people I don't think are familiar with it. But basically, in this town, in order to keep the peace and to appease whatever is going on, they draw lots, they draw a lottery, and the winner of the lottery doesn't win anything. They just get dead. They get in the case of the lottery, they get the town circles around this person who won the lottery, and they just stone her to death. Death, which means they throw rocks at her until she's dead. So in this structure of this world, you basically have families that are required to give up one of their own children for a sacrifice to these upper godlike beings, right? And one of the things I loved about this is you focus specifically on this one family. They're very bird-like looking people. There's a lot of anthropomorphizing going on with this because I think there's different races throughout, because you have this bluebird humanoid family that you're following, but you also kind of see that there's other colors of the same type of bird, but there's also humans in this mix as well. And you're specifically focusing really on this father. And at first the father comes across as very cold and unfeeling because they have to keep their, you know, they basically keep their child, because every family has to give up a child for this sacrifice. And they keep the child who has to go for the sacrifice, they keep him isolated and separated from the rest of the family. And then he sneaks out and is watching the family have dinner on the night before he's supposed to get taken away. And the father gets very upset because he having like his, you know, the mother see the child upsets the mother. And so the father has to discipline this child. And you're like, okay, this father is not a good bird person, right? He is not he is fully bought into this idea of the sacrifice. And then when they come calling, when they come to collect, you start to see him soften up, and basically he says, oh, our sacrifice died in the winter, I have nothing for you, and the collectors aren't buying it. And yes, so he does begrudgingly give up his child to go with the other children that are being sacrificed. And then, you know, we'll find out exactly what that entails, where they go, how that plays off. But then you also have the daughter of basically, I guess, sort of the king of this world, who you can sort of see she has a bit of a rebellious streak. So I think where we're going with this is you're going to basically have her, I think, be sympathetic to the children that are being sacrificed, specifically the bluebird boy that we're going to focus on, you know, that we focused on in the first issue. And I think they're going to come together and they're either going to go on the run to protect him, or they're going to maybe come together to try and take down this system and make sure that people are treated fairly with no sacrifices. So there's a little bit of world building, but there's a lot more detail as to the whys that we're going to get as this series goes. Rick Remender is a great writer. His character work is really good in here. Max's artwork is fantastic. Really does convey the emotion, the mood, the pain that these characters are going through. And I was just emotionally just pulled right into this whole experience. It is billed as an ongoing, but we'll see how long that goes. But I'm really excited to see sort of what twists and turns this is going to take. And I think for people who like, you know, it's not as, I think, dense or graphic as Saga, but I think that this is going to, you know, people who like Saga or that type of sprawling narrative with really interesting looking characters, I think they're going to gravitate to this series as well. I think that this is going to have a nice, healthy life, and I think people are going to respond to it. But you know what? You got to go and pick it up and read it just to experience it for yourself. So yeah, The Sacrifices from Image, man. I dug this one too. Three great books last week.
Yeah, I agree. It's different because, you know, the stuff that I read from Rick Remender, I mean, from Deadly Class to Scumbag to, you know, Death of Glory, This is so outside of the realm of those type of books. But I think what they all had in common was sort of like the twist that you didn't expect. So I think we're going to get that with this book as well. So if it went straight forward where she was sympathetic to him, that would probably not be Rick Remender. Hmm. I think it would be more of she's doing it in spite of her father.
Mm-hmm.
These guys hate each other. And through their journey together and struggle together, they find commonality and probably create a relationship from there. It's going to be something of that, I believe, of that sort. So I'm in because I like Rick Remender and the art was fantastic and the concept of the story was really, you know, we've seen some of it before. So you mentioned the lottery. I mean, you have Hunger Games, sort of like that. You have Cabin in the Woods. You know, you're trying to appease the gods and you have these these different things that are going. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. Cabin in the Woods? Yeah.
Dude, fantastic. It just threw me the fuck off. But, but things like that. Yeah, so it's really interesting to see both sides of the same coin because you see what the father has to go through in order for the sacrifice is one section of it, and then you see the other side of it of the people that are requiring the sacrifice. And somewhere in the middle is that story that's going to come together that's going to really test the system. So if we look at Hunger Games, it was, you know, What's-Her-Face who tested the system and kind of like broke through. So it's going to be really interesting to see if it is going to be actually that little bird boy that, you know, becomes sort of like that pinnacle piece that changes the tides between what's going on. And it's funny because like we spoke about it as well, that I hardly ever read like the back end pages, like the author's notes or the editor's notes and stuff like that. And for him to say that he's always been intrigued by stories that weren't straightforward or really had to test the reader and or let the reader decide what was actually going on rather than being told what was going on. So if we read comics, you have your narration bubbles, right? And that's usually the narrator telling you what's going on in the story so that you can follow through. He doesn't have any of that shit. Mm-hmm. He wants the readers for themselves to decide what is actually, or decipher what's actually going on. So we had a conversation about the story and we read two totally different things. And you made me see what you read. And I was like, holy shit, I didn't see it. And I love that. I love the fact that we can read the same thing, but we walk away with two different things. So that means if 100 people read this book, there's possibly more things that they actually got out of it that we didn't. And it'd be great to have a conversation. That's a water cooler conversation. Like, oh, shit, I didn't even see that. So this book, for me, in that respect, has done something that hasn't been done in quite a while because it's not straightforward. The story's there, but I think what you take away from it is different from everybody because you don't have the narration bubbles to tell you this is what's going on. Yep. You have to freaking decipher what's going on in your own head as you're reading it through. So, yeah, really great book, Sacrifices from Image Comics. Pick it up if you want to be frustrated and enthralled at the same time, then this is the book for you.
Mm-hmm. And definitely read what Rick writes in the back because a lot of what he talks about, especially about, you know, what it's like to have a comic book rather than like a graphic novel, to go to a comic shop. I mean, he embraces things that we embrace. And I thought that his words at the end were awesome. And just, like I said, just in line with like, I think our shared philosophy of how important comics are as a medium and how important the community of a comic shop is as well. Right. That was really neat.
Yeah, cool. All right, why don't you go to the last one? I think you have the Enfield.
Yeah, so this is part of the world of That Texas Blood, as conceived by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. This is a sort of prequel. It is the Enfield Gang Massacre. It is written by Chris Condon, illustrated by Jacob Phillips, who is the son of Sean Phillips. I didn't know that until reading this. Color assist by Pip Martin. And I think that Jacob also did the lettering because I'm not seeing a letter credit. I could be wrong, but basically this is, like I said, in the world of the 20-issue series that Chris and Jacob did called That Texas Blood. Chris Condon also wrote one of my favorite one-shots that we reviewed probably about a year or so ago, Hell is a Squared Circle from Aftershock. So Chris is a really good, solid writer. He does great character works. He's really good at work. He's good at getting into characters' heads and conveying what they're thinking, even if he doesn't use thought bubbles, but in their actions and things like that. So basically what you have here is a framing sequence or an opening sequence that is sort of like this carnival sideshow thing in Oklahoma in 1906, Doc Malady's Wild West Sideshow. And there is a carnival barker who is enticing people to come and see this corpse of this guy, Montgomery Enfield, I believe his name is. Basically, yeah, he's got the mummified corpse on display. And he urges people to hear the story of how this guy became a corpse. Nice. So then you kind of, boom, you dissolve, boom, right into the guy from being a corpse to being a living guy. One of the great things in this book are the scene transitions. It is very cinematic. And I thought that the great care was used in developing these scene transitions. And some of them are almost on an Alan Moore level, like that first dissolve, like from the corpse to the living guy. So now we're back in 1875. There is a bank robbery committed by this Enfield guy who is sort of, you can kind of tell, he's sort of, he explains later on, he's kind of looking to get out of the bank robbing game, right? And unfortunately, after he robs this bank, somebody else, it looks like, comes in and kills the bank teller, kills people in the bank. And so the town now has to, you know, get the sheriff and a U.S. marshal involved in going after this Enfield gang. And that's sort of where we leave off with the beginning of that confrontation. Really, I love Westerns. I love Western comics. That Texas Blood was a more contemporary book. So I like that this is in the late 1800s. And it really captures that world really well. Just that sort of dirty, dusty world of the Old West. The art is beautiful and really evocative. It's colored really well. So you really get a nice sense of where you are and your location and in the story as well. And I believe it's a 5 or 6 issue miniseries. So I really look to see how this all plays out. There's some great back matter in this as well. That sort of it's like an article written in 1996 that basically says there was this one perception of what this massacre was and what happened. But with new information coming to light, we find that it is not necessarily having to do with, you know, Enfield as the catalyst, but somebody else that you meet briefly in the story as well. So to see that mystery get, uncovered in the book proper is, I think, going to be a really fun ride. The Enfield Gang Massacre, number one, Chris Condon, Jacob Phillips, existing in the world of That Texas Blood. If you like That Texas Blood, definitely pick this up. If you're not familiar with That Texas Blood, don't worry, because this is a really just a standalone that you can go into and enjoy on its own. And then I love there's like this cool little like wanted poster for Mike Enfield on the back. I thought that was really neat. So yeah, highly recommend this. This is from Image that also did that Texas Blood. The other thing I really like is that it's on this sort of like newsprint.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it. It just feels like an old comic. And the fact
does that, it smell like newsprint?
A little bit. Yeah. It smells a little pulpy. Yeah. And I also like that they didn't go with white pages. The pages themselves are sort of yellowed and off white. So it really feels like something from the past. So I thought that was really nice.
A little nostalgia there.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So who's the publisher on it again?
Oh, that's Image again as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. All right. We have one more. So I guess I'll finish this off. The Madness. This is from our guys over there at AWA. Artists, Writers, and Artisans. This is written by Michael Straczynski. Pencils and cover by ACO. Inks by David Lorenzo. Colors by Marcelo Maiolo. And letters by Sal Cipriano. Okay, I love me a good superhero story. We did Knighted a while back. Nemesis Reloaded was out for a bit. And so whenever we have like costume heroes, I'm in. I'm all in. If it's costume heroes that are quite unique, and there's a good story, then I'm even more in. this is a 6-issue mini, I'm in. This got me. It's funny because it's like oftentimes we get sort of like the superhero origin stories, but I think we're getting the villain origin stories, even though I don't think villains themselves set out to be villains.
Right.
I think it's happenstance and situation and what's going on. And I think this is one of those. And basically what we have is this woman who goes by the code name Raven, who is a thief. She just robs from the rich and, you know, doesn't give to the poor. Herself. But what makes her a little bit unique is that she has a family. Mm-hmm. She has a husband, wants to be husband, and two kids from this guy. And basically they're talking about this last job is going to set them up for life and she can get out of it. Now, it reminded me a little bit about an image book, Ambassadors,
mm-hmm.
where they have power sets, but they're only able to download a certain amount at a time. But they're shared power sets among a group. So if somebody's using a power set, that person can't download it. This person here can only have one power set at a time. So I'm not sure how many different powers she has, but she can only access one at a time. So it was really cool to have this, you know, the scene of her having a conversation with her partner, saying that if you do this, you can't do this. And this is, you know, you're going up against this and you're definitely going to need this. But if you use that, you can't use that and escape. And it was just a unique, but as she's doing everything, they're having that conversation. By the time the conversation's over, she's already done what she needed to do and stolen what she needs to steal. And this is pretty much sort of like repercussions of what happens when you do something and don't know what it's attached to. So I kind of like that portion of it, and what happens at the very end of this book to create where she's going to go next just had me at like, holy shit. Like, you knew it was coming, but to kind of like see and feel. And I think what got me with this particular book is that when certain things happen to the protagonist, it's usually two panels, and then all of a sudden that change happens. This was a series of panels where you could actually feel sort of like the pain in that moment, but it wasn't a moment. It was a moment that lasted. Like it was almost like watching Family Guy, and how, you know how, what's his face? What's Seth Green? No, what's his name?
Oh, who's Chris.
No. The guy that created
MacFarlane.
Seth MacFarlane. Like, he holds a moment so that it's so uncomfortable that you're waiting for it to be over. That's what this moment felt like. But I felt like the agony and the pain of what happened to this character because of the way the word bubbles were going and how long they were going for. So that's what I really liked about this particular storytelling style. I'm in. To see where it's going to go, it's going to be sort of like a Deadpoolish kind of, you know, I'm going to get everybody back. But there has to be a twist, because it can't be a straight up revenge story. Mm-hmm. There has to be something that happens that's going to, you know, keep us wanting to come back. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is, all right, this fucked up shit happened to this person, but what's going to be the twist? I mean, obviously we have sort of like their Justice League that's there. And it's crazy because it was the Justice League that caused this to happen, which was really weird. So it's like this sort of like backwards, where the Justice League are the bad guys, and this person is gonna end up being or exposing what, you know, the government has going on. So really, really cool art, great writing, you know, had me intrigued. Really good creative team. So for me, definitely worth the pickup, especially if you like sort of like that superhero genre. And this kind of gave it a good, you know, kick in the butt and a twist.
Oh, yeah. And J. Michael Straczynski, I mean, he's been doing comics, film, television for a long time. Babylon 5 was his show. He did a great run, or a mostly great run, on Amazing Spider-Man about 20 or so years ago. Rising Stars, Midnight Nation. I mean, these are all things that... So he knows comics, he knows storytelling, and he also knows how to take familiar tropes and turn them on their head. So like you said, you know, we have a professional thief who is the good guy in this story, and we have a team of superheroes who, I mean, even in how they are presented visually, are the bad guys. They are never fully seen. They talk in shadows. They bicker among each other. It was really, really well handled. The sort of menace or the quiet menace when it comes to this group of superheroes in this world. Now, this is his fifth, this is Straczynski's fifth book in that he's written for AWA. And I know most of them do kind of fit in the same continuity. I don't know if this is the case, but you know, it is like you said, on the surface, it feels like it's just going to be a sort of by the numbers trope playing on trope story, but there's a lot more going on. Clearly this deals with multiple personality disorder, because this thing that she turns into after this great tragedy apparently is something that has been inside her for a long time. And it took this level of catalyst to unleash the madness. And now that madness is unleashed on the world. And yeah, it's going to be messy, but I think it's going to be a fun ride too.
Yeah, I agree. So if you like the superhero genre and you want to see the trope kind of like turn on its head, check it out. The Madness, AWA. Yeah. Really good stuff. Yeah, so we have some good stuff. That's all that we have for you this week. Before we go, though, one thing. Go out and watch TMNT Mayhem. Holy crap. It's been a while since I've like seen a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle animated that just had me from the beginning. It was fun. It was unique. The best thing I liked about it was the characterization of each one of the turtles. They had their own, not only did they own had their own personality, but they weren't all the same size. Like Raph was the big guy and Mikey was a little guy. And then
Donatello's like really skinny and nerdy with the, he actually has glasses. Oh, yeah. Right?
And then having Jackie Chan as Splinter was fantastic. And then the whole setup at the very end. I mean, the animation was great because it reminded me of a little bit of like claymation and animation mixed together, because it was like almost stop motion at some times, mixed in with just, you know, really great animation. The storytelling was fantastic, even into April, and being able to use Rocksteady and Bebop in a different way, and having the a new bad guy, so we didn't have the Shredder again. It was just really fun. And you know, I'm sitting there with my wife, and you know, we took my daughter and her cousins, and we thought, you know, you're going to a kids movie, but I never laughed so freaking hard, because nice. just what they did with the script and how they just like stuck it out was fantastic. So if you guys haven't seen it, definitely go. You won't be disappointed, especially if you're a Teenage Mutant Turtle fan.
I'm glad, because I was a little concerned by what I was seeing coming out of this movie beforehand, that I was like, oh, this is looks like it just looks like it's so much of a departure from what I love about Turtles. But to hear everything that people have said about this movie, that it really does embrace the property, and there is a lot of love for the characters and the material in here, but that just puts a great new spin on it. I'm really happy, and I definitely look forward to checking it out. So yeah, I'm like I said, I was a little worried about this one with everything I was seeing beforehand, but to hear how great it is, it just makes me happy. So
yeah, I mean, obviously there's some differences and stuff like that, and people that are purists are probably going to have problems with it. But I think the overall theme or the underlying theme of, you know, who the turtles are is there. It's there. You can change all the ancillary stuff so that you can create a unit. I mean, look, we have TMNT Last Ronin. That's not canon. That's you know, an Elseworlds story. So I think you can have all these different iterations, as long as the heart and like the main portion of that story stays the same. It's really about a father and his sons. Yeah. That's what it is.
And as long as they're not from space, like Michael Bay almost did, then we're good. Yeah. Yeah. I heard the origin is intact. It is the origin that we are familiar with. So I'm happy with that.
Cause it's the ooze, not the goo, the ooze. Yeah, check it out for sure. all right, gang, that is all that we have for you this week. So if you like what you're hearing, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast just by clicking subscribe wherever you are. If you want to join us, if you're a creator, you have something that you want to promote, you know, you or yourself, go to AmazingActionComics.com/podcast. fill out the form. We'd love to have you on. Make sure you visit AmazingActionComics.com so that you can stay up to date on everything that we've got going on. And please, 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 please be sure to support your local comic book shops. Without them, we wouldn't be able to get our favorite pop culture week in and week out. And Phil and I wouldn't be able to have anything to do on Thursdays. So make sure you get there. Phil, where do you get your comics from?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey, where we have all these great comics that we've just reviewed today. We also have tons of really cool Ninja Turtles toys and statues that you might want to come and check out. We also have a great staff. We love talking to people about comics. We love recommending comics. We love finding comics for people. So, come on, check us out at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. If that's too far for you, well, I'm sure your town has a local comic shop that has just the same amount of experience and fun that we have at our shop. So, check out your local comic shop. But if you're in New Jersey, come check out The Joker's Child.
Absolutely. All right, kiddos, that is all that we have for you this week. So please, until next time, be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.